first when you hear a pun. Do you love it or groan out loud? Wit and wordplay have been part of how humans express themselves for probably as long as we've been humans. Or, as the cast of Monty Python once put it,
there is only one thing in the world worse than being witty, and that is not being witty.
James Geary is deputy curator of the Nieman Foundation for Journalism at Harvard and is the author of several books on words and language. His newest book comes out tomorrow. It's called Wit's End: What Wit Is, How It Works, and Why We Need It. James, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Well, before I looked inside your book, I thought, oh, it's going to be tough to write, you know, essays and all this dry history of wit and so on and still have fun with it. That's not what you did. You went for kind of a show, don't tell approach. Talk about how you tackled, in a lot of different ways, wit.
Right. Well, I tried the dry explanatory approach first. And reading my early drafts of the book, I realized trying to explain wit was destroying it in the process. And I was really kind of panicking because I thought, how am I ever going to write a book about wit without destroying the joke? And my son is an actor, and he went to drama school, and I was talking to him one day on the phone, and he said he was watching Buster Keaton films for one of his classes. Buster Keaton, the famous silent comic, who's one of my all-time favorite wits and heroes. And our kids grew up watching Buster Keaton films. And I said, well, why don't you tell your teacher that I'm writing a book about wit, and I'd be happy to come and talk about Buster Keaton and wit and how it applies to acting. And to my shock and surprise, his teacher said yes. And while I was talking to the acting students about wit, that's when I had the idea, I need to make this book witty and not just about wit, but make it witty itself. And that's how I ended up writing each chapter in a style that matches a different kind of wit. So, for example, the chapter that's about verbal wit is written as a dramatic dialogue from a play, and that comes directly from that experience at my son's acting class. But there's also a chapter written in rap. There's a chapter about the neuroscience of wit, how wit might work in the brain, that's written like a scientific paper. There's a chapter about spiritual wit that's written as a sermon. There's a chapter on about the philosophy of jokes that's written in the voice of a guy at a bar telling jokes. And there's other chapters written in heroic couplets of Alexander Pope and all kinds of other different styles. And again, the style of each chapter is intended to match the kind of wit that I'm discussing in that chapter. So you're absolutely right. I try to show what wit is rather than tell about it.
But one thing that emerges in all these different styles is, I think if you asked me earlier, I might think, oh, wit, it's kind of a luxury of human language. It's an extra, it's kind of fun stuff. And the more different ways you look at it, no, it's kind of central to how we think and communicate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the key insights that I had as a result of writing the book, is I think we tend to think of witty people as stand-up comedians and like people like Robin Williams with a really special kind of gift for speaking and using verbal wit. But actually, wit is a kind of fundamental aspect of human intelligence and creativity. And we tend to think of wit as making jokes, but wit is really even deeper than that. It's about making connections. And you can make connections if you're an inventor, for example, or if you're a business innovator, an entrepreneur, a scientist, a visual artist, or someone like Buster Keaton, who never said a word on screen and is incredibly witty. And I think what I discovered as a result of writing the book is that wit is really a kind of intelligence, and it has to do with like perceiving and gathering information from lots of different sources and being able to synthesize those different information points into something new, into something fresh, into something innovative. So the kind of laugh you get from a punchline is the same kind of shock of recognition, surprise, delight that an inventor has when she makes a discovery, or a scientist has when she makes a discovery. So you have the ha-ha of the punchline, but you have the aha of discovery, and you also have the ah of like aesthetic experience, artistic experience. And I think those reactions are all prompted by different kinds of wit, which, like I said, is a kind of the operating system of human creativity.
I do admire the people who are really good at being quick-witted. Sometimes I think I'm really witty after the fact. I think I'm one of those people who, you know, the next day I have, or sometimes 3 years later, think of the hilarious thing to say. Can we cultivate that, I guess, quick-wittedness?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, there's a term for the affliction that you suffer, Rob. It's called l'esprit d'escalier. It's a French phrase from the French philosopher Denis Diderot. And what it means is the wit of the staircase. And it actually comes from an experience that he had. He was at a dinner party, and he was insulted by a guest. And he was so taken aback and flustered that he couldn't think of a proper response. And he only thought of a proper response when he was walking down the stairs on his way out and on his way home. And that's why he called it the wit of the staircase. And I think one way to kind of train your mind to be witty, and this may, I know, upset some listeners who think puns are the lowest form of wit, but making puns is a great way to keep your mind agile and limbered up. And again, making a pun is identifying two separate things, you know, a pun, two different words that sound alike, but they have separate meanings. And when you bring them together in a pun, you create that that reaction of surprise and delight. And that's basically the essence of true wit, the ability to hold in the mind two different ideas about the same thing at the same time. So when George Carlin, for example, said atheism is a non-profit institution, he was making a really funny pun about non-profit in the sense of religious seers and non-profit in the sense of not accepting any financial reward. So that's a kind of a very clever pun, but it's also a philosophical statement, a sort of critique about religions, which many of which claim to be non-profit, but are among the wealthiest institutions on earth. So I think a pun kind of re-energizes the mind precisely by making these surprising connections. And the more you do it, the easier it gets, and the more fun it gets.
James Geary is with us. His new book is called Wit's End, What Wit Is, How It Works, and Why We Need It. Well, funny you should mention puns, James. We did a show about puns about a year ago, and we recruited a couple of our WPR classical music hosts, Norman Gilliland and Stephanie Elkins, to record some. Here's a little listen.
What do you call a snobbish criminal walking down the stairs? A condescending condescending.
To the mathematician who invented zero, thanks for nothing.
I've accidentally swallowed some Scrabble tiles. My next trip to the bathroom could spell disaster. Oh my God.
Now, there's an extra level here, James, of our fairly dignified on-air personalities sharing these bad jokes and puns with us. That kind of adds to the fun, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And you know what's those are amazingly good puns, by the way. I think what's interesting about a pun is that it not only makes you laugh, but it makes you think. And I think that's another characteristic of true wit. It's not just about the laugh, but it leaves a trail of thought, after it. And I think what you also see in puns, and this is true of jokes and witty remarks in general, is that the person who makes the pun, you know, thinks of that connection between Scrabble and a trip to the bathroom spelling disaster, for example. But the person who hears the pun has to make the identical connection. So the person who originates the pun and the person who understands the pun are actually performing the same intellectual creative work. They are figuring out the same connections. One is doing it in one direction and the listener is doing it in the other direction. But I think that's part of the joy of puns and wit in general, is that they challenge you. They challenge you to figure something out. They don't present you with everything kind of laid out and explained, but you have to do just as much creative work as the person who originates the pun or the joke. And I think that's why even listening to puns also kind of trains your mind to be more witty.
That's the joy of puns. I am someone who does tell a lot of puns, and yeah, sometimes people laugh, but sometimes friends, family, and coworkers, I'll get that sense, oh, this guy again. Why do we sometimes hate puns and those who share them?
I don't know. I think anything, if it's, I think we've all had the experience of someone who thinks he's witty and is perhaps not as witty as he thinks he is.
Yeah, that's me.
Or someone who, relentlessly delivers puns and jokes and wisecracks and things like that. And so I think that's, I think that may be part of it, because puns, like everything else, I think are best in moderation. But I also think that there's a fundamental misunderstanding about humor. And I think people tend to assume that if you're being funny, if you're being witty, you're not being serious. And I fundamentally disagree with that. I think witty people, even when they're being funny, are some of the most serious people around. In fact, to stick with the French, the French word for wit is spirituel. It means witty, but it also means spiritual, as in religion. And I think that's a great example of how wit combines the most lighthearted and the most serious aspects of human life. And to be able to have both of those things in your mind, you know, when you're in a situation, a crisis situation or an emergency, or you have to solve a problem, and you can make a witty, lighthearted remark, it shows that you're really engaging with the problem and you're thinking very broadly. And again, you're kind of processing lots of different information. And as you said at the top of the conversation, making a joke like that releases tension. It kind of gives people energy, intellectual and physical energy, and makes them feel, you know, up and is motivating. And I think that's why, you know, well-deployed wit and well-deployed puns can be really inspiring.
James Geary is with us talking about wit and why we appreciate witty people and comments so much. His latest book is out tomorrow. It's called Wit's End: What Wit Is, How It Works, and Why We Need It. And you can bear witness at 800-642-1234. Do you enjoy puns and plays on words? Do you make them yourself? Do you get the laugh and or groan? And who's the wittiest person you can think of in your circle of friends and family, or famous historical figures for that matter? Who do you look to as a source of great wit? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our conversation about wordplay and wit with James Geary. He's the author of the new book coming out tomorrow called Wit's End: What Wit Is, How It Works, and Why We Need It. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you appreciate a good pun? Do you maybe even have one to share? Are you the person who makes people laugh, groan, and think with your wordplay? And do you have a favorite source of wit? An author, a historical figure, a comedian, somebody you really appreciate their wit? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. And James, you wrote about, and in some ways wrote as, a number of different historical witty figures. Through this whole process, who, now that you've done this, who do you really respect and think, wow, they are really the pinnacle of wit in some ways?
Wow. Well, it's really hard to choose just one, but
you can pick more than one. Sure.
Well, I mentioned Buster Keaton. I just love Buster Keaton, and what I admire so much about him is he manages to be witty without ever saying a word, and the way that he plays with the laws of physics. And he's not using CGI. I mean, he made his films in the 19-teens and 20s, most of them. And the simplicity but ingeniousness of his wit, I think, is just incredible. And it never ceases to amaze me. Just a couple quick examples. He's in one of his short films, he's on a boat and his girlfriend falls overboard and he's rushing around trying to save her as she's drowning, and he gets a life preserver from the side of the ship, and he throws it into the water, and immediately the life preserver sinks. He comes home from work, he opens the door, goes into his apartment, takes out a piece of chalk from the pocket of his coat, he draws a hook on the wall, then takes off his coat and hangs his coat on the hook that he just drew. It's just these beautiful ways that he plays with how we see things and what we see. So I would say Buster Keaton is one of my all-time wittiest people.
Let's go to our callers now. Ethan is with us in Janesville. Ethan, I understand you have a pun or two for us.
Hi, nice to speak to you. Yeah, I work at the DNR here, and our forester is just loaded with puns. Seems to make quite a game out of it. He leaves me stumped more than I'm here to admit.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, as you can tell, it can go pretty far pretty fast.
Does he branch out into other areas of punning?
No, he mainly keeps it to trees, nuts, stumps, all things tree and forest.
All right. Well, quite a few oaks there to share, I'm sure, Ethan. Thank you so much for that.
Ooh, very good,
and
Rob.
I imagine a lot of, there are a lot of like specialty groups or insider groups that really go deep with their puns, James.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think people with a certain kind of specific knowledge, they can make puns that only someone else with that same set of information can understand. And that's why sometimes you see jokes from one culture don't really translate to another culture. And that's because to get a joke, you have to understand the context and the associations. And if you don't have the same set of associations, it can be hard to get the wit.
Ethan, thanks a lot for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. There can be a dark side of wit, James. I mean, I think of people talk about Dorothy Parker and her circle, and a lot of them are like mean jibes. Hilarious, but mean. Or I played that clip of Monty Python doing Oscar Wilde and George Bernard Shaw trying to one-up each other with wit. Can it take kind of a mean turn?
Yeah, I think wit can be used as a weapon. And in fact, the way that we talk about people who are witty, they have like a rapier wit, or they make a cutting remark. Those are all kind of metaphors that have to do with fencing. And wit can be a kind of, we also talk about the battle of wits. It can be like a fencing match with, you know, people sparring and trying to get the sharpest stab at the most sensitive spot. And so I think, yeah, the way that wit can be deployed is as a kind of defensive mechanism. So you can be witty to distract from other types of feelings you may be experiencing. But yes, wit can be used as a weapon, and it can be used as a way to kind of humiliate or demean other people.
Talking to James Geary, author of Wits and What Wit Is, How It Works, and Why We Need It. That book comes out tomorrow. James, you did one of your chapters is, as you said, a scientific essay on the neuroscience of wit. What happens in our brains when we hear that, say, that pun that makes us stop and think?
Well, there are one theory is that there are two basic operating modes of the brain, the default network and the executive network. And the executive network kicks into gear when we're focused on a specific task, like we're trying to solve a problem or trying to fix a car engine or trying to do some mathematical equation. The default network is sort of the background operating mode of the human mind. And that's sort of like daydreaming, or when you're just kind of letting your mind wander, or sort of like the psychological equivalent of looking out the window of a train, and you're aware of all the things passing by. You're very aware of everything around you, but your attention is very diffuse, and it's not specified towards a specific task. And I think in that state, the default network of the brain, that's when we hear the various associations. So the guy who's making all the puns about trees and branches and your great pun about oak, we hear all this, and because our attention is spread very, very wide, we pick up, oh yeah, that's also a reference to trees, and that's a reference to trees, and we wouldn't be able to pick up those different references if we were overly focused on one task. So when you're being witty, whether you're making a witty remark or hearing one, your attention is ranging very, very far in the mode of the default network.
Time for one more caller. Jeff is with us in Superior. And Jeff, I think you have a joke to share.
Yeah, isn't it ironic when a veterinarian has to go see a doctor because he has a hoarse voice?
Jeff, thanks. And there's so much. Is the English language particularly set up for puns, James, or does everybody get to share in this kind of fun? Because there's so many words. Homophones, is that what it is? The words that spell different sound the same. We have a lot of fun available to us briefly.
Yeah, we do. I mean, English is made up of, it's influenced by so many other languages. So we have more to choose from, but every language has those same kind of punning ability. And in fact, there's even a term for making a pun that's also puns on a word in another language, and it's called macaronic, where macaroni comes from. So you could say something like jokes about German sausage are the Wurst. And that's a macaronic pun because the worst in English and Wurst in German sound the same.
And the French president could tell macaronic puns as well.
You are good, Rob. You are good.
I try. I really psych myself up for this one. James, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
James Geary is a deputy curator of the Nieman Foundation for Journalism at Harvard. He's the author of several books on words and language. We've been talking about his new one. It's out tomorrow. It's called Wit's End: What Wit Is, How It Works, and Why We Need It. You can share your favorite pun, by the way, over at the Ideas Network Facebook page. Share a pun or two while you're there, or share a great example, a writer, a speaker, a comedian who you think is just the wittiest one out there, your favorite source of wit. Again, that's over on the Ideas Network Facebook page.